In the simplest form, I think that clinical governance is really about optimizing health outcomes and minimizing risk through practical best practice. Now, I've emphasized practical because I think when people think of clinical governance, they think of this overarching framework that is a process or a system or a guideline that sits in a folder in your top shelf collecting dust. And that's not what clinical governance is to me. Clinical governance is this living, breathing framework that we should be implementing and engaging with on a daily basis to ensure that we are practicing to the best of our ability. Hi, I'm Chantelle Turner, Pharmacist Leadership Coach at Turn Pharmacy Leadership, and you're listening to the Guild Dispensary podcast.
Welcome to the Guild Dispensary, the pharmacy podcast where we dispense the latest news and updates from the Guild, and you get to hear from industry experts on business and pharmacy-related topics.
Clinical governance. We all know about it, but what is it really? Why does it matter? And how can we move beyond just ticking boxes to make it a practical, impactful part of our everyday work? Today, we're speaking to Chantelle Turner. Chantelle is a pharmacist leadership coach at Turn Pharmacy Leadership, and she's here to share her insights on making clinical governance practical and ensuring that everyone in your pharmacy understands why it's important and how to implement it themselves. Stay tuned as we uncover the strategies and practices that can transform clinical governance from a bureaucratic chore into a dynamic framework for improving quality, safety, and accountability in pharmacy.
First up, it's time for What You May Have Missed, where we catch up on the latest news from the Guild. In the fast-paced world of pharmacy, it's easy to overlook some key updates. So let's dive in and make sure you're up to speed.
Updates to the Find a Pharmacy website. We are currently in the early stages of updating the Find a Pharmacy website to enhance the user experience. To better understand the needs of our users, we have created a user survey to gather qualitative data on experiences, preferences, and satisfaction levels when using our website. We kindly ask for your assistance in sharing this survey with your family, friends, or patients. Whether they are frequent or new users, their responses will help ensure Find a Pharmacy meets the needs of our communities. To access and participate in the survey, you'll find a link titled Website Feedback in your recent Guild Alert. Glad to have you on the podcast, Chantelle. Let's kick off with something fairly broad about you, telling us a little bit about yourself, such as what got you into pharmacy and how your career's progressed and ultimately what you're focused on now, because that's why we have you on the show.
I got into pharmacy because it was really that ideal combination of science and helping people and also that sense of community. And I always knew I wanted to be a community pharmacist. I grew up in a small rural town, and the community pharmacist was someone who was really respected and admired, and I was one of those people that admired them as well. So that was where I guess I started. But as I went through uni and become more aware of, you know, the breadth of pharmacy, I realized that the influential role that we have in communities was far greater than what I even had originally anticipated. And I really fell in love with that. But to be able to be a really effective community pharmacy, we really needed the whole team involved. Now, I became a pharmacist when I was only 20. And so I was in my intern year as I was turning 21 and fully fledged pharmacist very early on in, you know, in my 21st year. And basically, I realized that if I really wanted to practice to my full capacity as a pharmacist, I really needed the help of my team. And there was lots of challenges around that, being my age, I was just out of uni. So it really kind of sparked the interest in terms of how we could develop all of these other people to make sure we were giving the best health outcomes to our patients, but also wasn't burning me out in the meantime. So cut forward, I became a manager. I did have that burnout because I wasn't really good at delegating and I wasn't really that great of asking for what I need. And it sent me on this quest to figure out what I could do to improve leadership of myself and also leadership of others. So from there, I did a coaching, a leadership coaching course, some small business management qualifications, became accredited in emotional intelligence and cultural intelligence. And that's where it leads me to now, which is basically helping pharmacists and pharmacy teams to develop the skills, the leadership skills for themselves and their others that really improves the outcomes for themselves, their teams, the pharmacy, and most importantly, their patients, and doing that in a really sustainable way. So that's what I'm focused on now. And it's really about getting those skill sets into as many hands as possible across the country, because I think that that is going to keep people in our profession and also elevate the quality of the service that we provide as well.
It's a really interesting phrase or terminology that you use when you're talking about self-leadership, because I've never really heard anybody talk about that before. And I'm sure we'll pick up on that theme as we progress, but you helping pharmacy and pharmacy staff on those fronts, it really does go hand in hand with clinical governance. And it's one of those things that I'm sure everyone in pharmacy, they know about clinical governance, but when you really delve into it, there's often a lot more to uncover. When you think about clinical governance yourself in a community pharmacy setting, what does it mean to you, and why is it such a big deal, do you think?
In the simplest form, I think that clinical governance is really about optimizing health outcomes and minimizing risk through practical best practice. Now, I've emphasized practical because I think when people think of clinical governance, they think of this overarching framework that is a process or a system or a guideline that sits in a folder in your top shelf collecting dust. And that's not what clinical governance is to me. Clinical governance is this living, breathing framework that we should be implementing and engaging with on a daily basis to ensure that we are practicing to the best of our ability.
Who really needs to grasp the concept of clinical governance? Is it really just the pharmacy owner and it's their job to implement it and lead it, or is it more widespread in a community pharmacy?
Look, I think it is more widespread. I think everyone needs to grasp the concept of clinical governance. And, you know, we've spoken about my passion around leadership development in community pharmacy. And I think the reason why everyone does need to be aware and understand the true meaning and the value of clinical governance is because if we're going to have people buy into implementing and engaging with clinical governance, they first need to understand it. If we don't, it looks then like something that can be a bit heavy-handed, or it's just compliance-based. And that's not what I think it's going to need to really bring it to life. So I think everyone needs to have a strong grasp on the concept of what it is and how we engage with it, again, on a daily basis, so it's practical.
I love that comment that you made earlier about practical best practice, because that feels less of a pass or a fail mark and more around adapting it to what you can actually achieve and what's right for your organization and particular setups. I'm wondering how that flows into process and change management and how that fits into the picture when rolling out clinical governance, because I'm sure there's multiple ways to go around it. It's not just a do it this way, this is the best way, you have to do it this way.
Yeah, 100%. And I really like that you picked up on the idea that it's practical, so it needs to be adaptable as well. When it comes to rolling out anything, I think we should be looking at focusing on tailoring clinical governance or these frameworks to work within our pharmacy and within our team. So, of course, there is best practice for service delivery, and there's going to be this overarching guidelines that we do need to meet the criteria for to ensure that we are meeting best practice. But there's inevitably going to be these nuances between teams and staff, and even like the physical layout of pharmacies, the skill level of the people within the teams. And that's going to adapt how this rolls out on a daily basis. So when it comes to process management and change management and implementing clinical governance, I think it's really important that we look at the practical makeup of our teams, and then look at how we can bring them along and engage them in what we're already doing so they've got something that they can relate it to, but then also look at how we can engage them to buy in and be part of the process in evolving our practice to become more in line with those best practice guidelines and the framework, the overarching framework that we're working within as well. So I think while we look at the framework in that big picture, I think it is really important that we're looking at it through the lens of how can I make this relatable to my team and my pharmacy? Because if we don't do that, we're going to be trying to shoehorn our pharmacy into something else, and that can become a little bit problematic.
Well, let's pick up on that point and dig a little bit deeper, because leadership is clearly going to be one of the keys in making clinical governance stick in an organisation. But how do you practically see leaders getting their teams fully on board? What sort of things do they need to be doing? What have you seen work really well in the past, or maybe not work so well, that people need to avoid? Because we definitely don't, as you said, we don't want it to be a blunt object that we just impose on people. But we also don't want it to just be a box-ticking exercise. We want it to add value and ultimately provide better care to the community.
I think the simplest way to boil it down is to Simon Sinek's famous quote, which is, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And I know he was talking about it in a different context, in a bigger picture of why in terms of a whole business, but I think it still rings true when we're looking at implementing clinical governance and making it stick. We need our team to engage with it, and people aren't going to engage with the ticking the box at the end, the what, the systems, because they can feel hard and uncomfortable, and they don't understand why the change has to occur, and it seems like change for change's sake. So if we start at the other end and we talk to them about why we are doing this, how this relates back to our overall vision as a pharmacy, what our values are as a pharmacy, or our mission statement, and how clinical governance supports that, that is the place to start, and that's the place that will help them to understand why it's important for them to at least take notice of it. Then I think what we need to do is then look at how are we going to bring this why to life? And that is through looking at the framework and seeing, you know, how we can communicate it effectively with people, how we can engage people, bring them along and help them to be part of the planning and the process. And then it moves out to the what. And the what is that final document of, you know, the box ticking, the QCPP. But it's really about getting them involved and understanding and buying into the concepts before it gets to just the execution on the daily basis. It's what's going to make it either stick and become embedded and help the team to become the custodians of the change that needs to be made or is being made, as opposed to feeling that it is imposed on them.
So you use words there like embedding and the staff being custodians. Talk about taking them on a journey, engaging with them, talking to them about the why. This is all stuff at the start, right, to make sure that we get off on the right foot and we're moving in the right direction. How do you maintain it on that front and keeping people engaged and making sure that it stays embedded, that they stay as custodians and they still always understand the why?
I love that question, and it's so important and highlights the importance of that continual communication and the continual feedback loop. When we're communicating as leaders with our team, it should be just that. It should be with our team, not to our team, okay? So what we need to do is make sure that we're engaging in two-way conversation. And when we're communicating, we're not just looking for the smiles and the head nods saying that they understand. It's about reading body language and reading those underlying cues and looking for where things are going awry to be able to unpack where things might not make sense, because people might not feel safe enough or comfortable enough to put their head up and say, hey, I don't know. So I think it's really important that we are having those conversations and looking beyond the yes, I understand, inverted commas, that people say, and look for other insight or other ways to be able to identify that it's still connecting. In terms of circling back to the why, I think it's really about, I'm going to use the word embedding again, embedding the why in our language as well. So it's not just about talking about have we complied with the particular framework that we're talking about. It's about what has this outcome generated, or what has the outcome, what outcome has been impacted, for argument's sake, and why that is of value or why that's a challenge as well. So I think that it is talking about it in that broader sense and talking about it in the value that it's bringing to the pharmacy in a way that's meaningful for them. Because, you know, to use a bit of an acronym, WIFMs, what's in it for me? People need to understand why it means something to them and what they're getting out of it. So, you know, maybe it is that they've improved the health of a particular patient by following this because they've identified something that they wouldn't have otherwise identified. Maybe they minimized the risk of a mistake, or they mitigated a mistake because they followed this new framework and it wouldn't have been picked up without it. These are the types of things that's relating it back to why. So again, it becomes meaningful and practical and understandable in their context, because clinical governance is just two words at the end of the day if we don't apply it to our context in our pharmacy.
Chantel, it's a pharmacist's worst nightmare, but mistakes do happen, of course. While we don't ever want to make light of mistakes in a clinical setting, more widespread thinking, just in general, in the community and in business, in other areas of life, is that mistakes help us learn. And even in some environments, we openly talk about being okay around failing quickly and failing fast and making mistakes. It's all part of the process of learning to get where we want to go to. And so how do we even shift the mindset around errors being okay or even helpful for continuous improvement? And is there wiggle room, so to speak?
Pharmacists are inherently risk averse, and this question around mistakes and how we make people more comfortable with making the mistakes without trivializing it is something that comes up time and time again in the work that I do. And it's because obviously mistakes in terms of pharmacy and patients can be really dire, and no one wants to make them. But I think the answer in terms of making it okay is about, of course, not trivializing the end result, but making sure that we have done the groundwork within our teams to make sure that our team feels safe, that there's psychological safety. We have empathy for ourselves and empathy for our team. No one wants to make a mistake. No one wants to put someone's life at risk or hand out the wrong prescription. And so no one's beating themselves up as badly as what that person is. So I think that we need to be mindful that when we are addressing and approaching these mistakes that are made, that we do it with unconditional positive regard for the person. So the person can still be a good pharmacist. They can be a good person. They can be a person that is trying their best while also making a mistake, and that mistake has been the challenge. So we want to make sure that people feel safe enough and comfortable enough to be able to express mistakes and be able to work through them as well. And that, I guess, brings us to the next point. We need to, I think, approach mistakes with curiosity and a learning experience and look at where the gaps were. How can we prevent it again? And how can we more broadly learn from it as a team? Not that we're making an example of someone in particular, but we're looking at the actual process that has been a problem. And a lot of the time it's a process failure that has let us down. So I think first we need safe teams that people feel comfortable to speak up and communicate, and to be able to have those conversations around when mistakes do occur. And that is something that happens long before and is so relevant in other areas, not only clinical governance, but then also think about how we address the mistake as well. So can we approach it with empathy? Can we look at it in a way of curiosity to be able to expand awareness and be able to, you know, pass that knowledge on to others as well?
So that's one lesson that a pharmacy can take from clinical governance and apply it to other areas of the business. Are there any other lessons from managing changing clinical governance that you think could be applied to other pharmacy settings as well?
Absolutely. As far as I'm concerned, the principles stay the same when it comes to managing change, whether it's clinical governance, whether it's a shop refit or a new service or even reviewing an old one that you want to evolve. We still want people to understand why we're doing it. We don't want to necessarily just dictate what the outcome is. We don't want to just come with the iron fist, and we want to engage them along the way, along the journey, because the more people can buy into what change has to be made and be involved in the process of curating it, developing it, and then also reworking it as well in that feedback loop that we were talking about before, the more that they're going to, again, become the custodians of it and take it forth in their daily practice.
Well, sort of staying on that same theme of learning from mistakes and keep moving forward, what are some common slip-ups you've seen in understanding or putting clinical governance into action in community pharmacies?
People think that the fastest route is to just do the tick and flick. And by doing that, they don't get the engagement. So they might get it for a week or so, and then everyone falls off the bandwagon. So the main things or the slip-ups that I see with that is that the change and the importance of it is under-communicated. They say it once, but once isn't enough. People have to understand, and people assume people's level of understanding. That is a big challenge as well. So it really comes back to the importance of communication and setting that up even before you're out of blocks when it comes to implementation. The other thing I think that also happens as well is that people try and take someone else's template and don't look at it in terms of the context of their pharmacy. So that creates a whole heap of friction points. And then the last thing I see, and I think it often comes from a place of really good intention, but people overcomplicate things. So when we think about whether it's clinical governance or any other form of change or the service that we're doing, it needs to be executable. So how can we execute this to make sure that we're making sure that there's safety, we've improved the quality, it's effective? But how can we do this in the simplest way possible? Because when we overcomplicate things, that creates more resistance, that's more friction points to go wrong, that's more communication that needs to occur, and that's where the downfall happens as well. So it comes from a really good intention, but the outcome just doesn't really work.
Pharmacy students come straight from university into a pharmacy, and there's always a big difference probably between what you learn in an educational setting versus what you learn in a work setting when you're actually trying to apply the things that you've learned. Do you think pharmacy students are learning enough about clinical governance in their degree programs?
In terms of what pharmacy students are learning at uni about clinical governance, I'm not particularly sure what each of the courses entail. But what I do see in terms of the work that I do is that there needs to be more work done to help pharmacy students take their theoretical knowledge and apply it into that clinical practice, into that work setting in a meaningful way. Now, this is difficult because it depends on the workplace that they're going to, and everyone, of course, is going to do something slightly different. But I think this is where emotional intelligence and being able to look at all of the data and be able to decipher, you know, what we've learned and how we can apply really comes into play. Because the better we can do that, the better we can look at these overarching frameworks and have the skills to be able to implement them within the practices that we're in. And if the students can understand that, sooner after coming out, they become more effective parts of the team more quickly as well, because they can have meaningful involvement too.
Some great advice there. And it's been a really interesting chat. As we start to wrap it up, what's the one thing you hope our listeners really grasp from the conversation today?
The thing I want the listeners to grasp is that if you want meaningful change and implementation of clinical governance in your pharmacy, it needs to be approached that is more than just a check the box exercise. We need to step back and look at the value that it provides our pharmacy, why it's important to what we do, and then how we engage our team with this really important message and involve them in designing it to bring it to life.
Chantelle Turner, pharmacist leadership coach at Turn Pharmacy Leadership. Thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your expertise and insights into clinical governance in community pharmacy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks again to Chantelle for coming on the show and sharing some strategies and practices that can transform clinical governance from a bureaucratic chore into a dynamic framework for improving quality, safety, and accountability in pharmacy. If you'd like to connect with Chantelle, you can do so. Simply head to turnpharmacy.com.au. That's T-U-R-N pharmacy.com.au. Until next time, I've been your host, Daniel Oyston, and you've been listening to episode 7 of The Guild Dispensary.